This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Intercom, an association made up of communication professionals in Kalamazoo, is hosting an event on Thursday called Breaking the News. The panel discussion, which will include WMUK News Director Andy Robbins, explores the future of local news coverage. Coming up, we'll be joined by Intercom Board President Gretchen Johnson and Columbia Journalism Review Midwest correspondent Anna Clark, who will moderate Thursday's discussion at Western Michigan University's Fetzer Center. But first, a new study finds that outcomes for students in online or virtual classrooms are consistently behind those of traditional public schools. Western Michigan University Professor of Evaluation, Measurement, and Research Gary Miron co-authored the report for the National Education Policy Center. Gary Miron, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Gordon.
First of all, who were you looking at here? Which online schools and blended classrooms are you taking a look at in this study?
We look at schools that are identified as schools because they have unique building ID numbers. So we're not looking at individual classrooms or programs within schools or districts. We're looking at entities that we can classify as schools, standalone schools, either the blended learning, which are also referred to as hybrid schools, or we're looking at the full-time virtual schools.
And when you look at the results, how much difference is there between a student who is in a traditional public school classroom and a student who is trying to learn through one of these online programs?
Well, we found that across the board, the indicators that we looked at on school performance and student performance at the schools, students in those programs, the blended learning and the full-time virtual schools, they were far behind students in traditional public schools. And this is a finding that's not surprising because others, including in our earlier research, we have found the same finding. And other groups have studied the same topic and they come up with similar findings as us. So that didn't come as a surprise. This year, we expanded our study and our research to include those blended learning schools. And we really expected those schools to perform better, given that the students would be having face-to-face time with teachers, that the students would be having probably smaller classrooms and groups that they would be participating in. As the results turned out, they had very large teacher-to-student ratios, and they had performance levels that were similar, and in some cases slightly worse than the virtual school. So that came as quite a surprise to us.
But might there be some people out there who are successfully working online aspects into education, who are doing it well, and that doesn't necessarily show up in a study like yours?
Certainly. In total, we had close to 90 schools that were blended learning schools and around 450 schools that were identified as full-time virtual schools. That's across the nation, and those numbers are going up. But we're looking at full-time, you know, virtual or blended learning schools, and that does not include the innovations that are happening across the country in district schools. Some teachers are flipping their classrooms. They are essentially doing a blended learning program, and many schools are developing their own programs, and districts are developing online or blended learning programs that are not classified as schools. These tend to be, again, teacher-driven or district-driven. They're not driven by these private entities that dominate in that sector with the full-time virtual and blended learning school. So there's a lot of innovation that's happening, and our study doesn't encompass what's going on with, you know, the innovations driven by teachers or schools that are classified as programs or just classroom initiatives.
And when you are trying to tease out how these schools are doing, you're looking at test scores, graduation rates?
Yep, graduation rates. We've looked at attrition rates. We've looked at state performance ratings that are assigned to schools based on a number of indicators. Some of the research done by Credo at Stanford University, they've even broken down the data to student-level analyses where they've matched students and tracked them over time and came up with a similar finding to what we come up with our more general indicators of school performance.
Just to put a point here on how your study is characterizing what these schools do, I want to read from the conclusion because this is pretty blunt. There is not a single positive sign from the empirical evidence presented here. Given this picture, continued expansion seems unwise. More research is needed. To enable such research, state oversight agencies need to require more and better refined data. I mean, that spells out a pretty dark picture for these institutions, doesn't it?
It doesn't. And what's surprising is that this finding is being verified by other research groups. It's even been funded by a group of studies that were commissioned by the Walton Foundation, which is very pro-charter school. Those studies even also came up with similar findings. So we're seeing, in part now, the charter school establishment in our nation kind of distancing themselves from the online charter schools and the blended learning charter schools because of their dismal performance. So what's really surprising is not that every indicator suggests that these schools are failing. What's surprising is that nothing is being done about it. That's really shocking and disappointing.
You do spell out some policy recommendations, and I will get to those in a moment. But before we do that, I just want to also talk about who are these students. Do we have some characteristics, demographic or otherwise, that we can say about the students who are getting education or trying to, at least online?
Yeah, when we look at the full-time virtual schools, the demographics suggest that relative to state and national averages, that children that qualify for free and reduced lunch, low-income students, those students tend to be underrepresented in the full-time virtual schools. Minority students also tend to be underrepresented. When we look at the blended learning schools, because there's such a concentration of these schools in California, they kind of shift the demographics somewhat. But we see more Hispanic students in the blended learning schools, and we see similar proportions of low-income students in the blended learning schools relative to the full-time virtual schools, which have far fewer low-income students.
So the policy recommendations that you make include that policymakers should slow or stop the growth in the number of virtual schools and blended schools and the size of their enrollments until the reasons for their relatively poor performance have been identified and addressed.
Yes. Yeah, that's the most important recommendation. We have to stop. We believe, and when I say we, it's me and my co-author from the University of Memphis, but as well as other researchers at the National Education Policy Center that have also been critical of this new opportunity space, this new school reform that's happening in this opportunity space. There's a number of us looking at this, and people think we're critics. We believe in this. This is exciting. We believe that especially blended learning is going to be increasingly used in the future. So we don't believe that this should be stopped permanently. We think we need a moratorium on this so that we can figure out how to make this work. As it stands, this is an opportunity space that's been defined by the very companies that are positioned to profit from it. And we see that in state after state when these companies that are pushing this, they are the ones lobbying in their introduced model legislation, and we see state after state adopting similar legislation. And this is a very a model that really leads to a reform that's going to benefit these companies, both in the way they're funded and the way they're overseen by the state agencies. And what we really need is instead a different approach, bringing together academics, researchers. We need to bring together practitioners, and we need to talk about how this reform should look and how the funding mechanisms should look. How do we put in the right incentives for these, even if we're going to have the private operators, how do we have in place the right incentives so they're going to work on the public's best interest, not their own best interest? So we need to rethink this model. And I think that when we do that, we would have more success. And I believe that the innovations, when there's research to prove this, that we don't have it yet, but when there's research on what classroom teachers are doing in their own experimentation with blended learning, using these new technologies, I think we're going to see very promising evidence. And this would also help us to know how to scale up a successful model for full-time blended learning or full-time virtual schools.
So another recommendation, oversight authorities should hold virtual schools and blended schools to the same standards as other publicly funded schools if they fail to improve performance.
Yep. And what not only is their performance poor and we don't see legislative action or oversight agencies taking action, but it's also the case that many of the bills that there's been some analysis by Professor Luis Huerta from Teachers College at Columbia. He's examined the legislative bills that are coming up because, in fact, there is some action being taken by legislators. But any bills that are restrictive in nature, and his analysis looks across the 30-plus states with full-time virtual schools and blended learning schools. But if they're restricted in nature, they're not getting to the floor for a vote. They're being killed in committee or beforehand. And there's so much lobbying and political interest involved, especially by the two big companies, K-12 Incorporated and Connections Academy, which is a part of Pearson. These are very, very big companies with lots of money, especially since they're profiting so much on their particular models. And they're taking that money and putting it into the political arena. And they're stopping any legislation, any sensible legislation that could help rein in these reforms.
As we talk here, something comes to mind, which is that recently Albion voted to have their school district annexed by Marshall. And there may be more school consolidation like votes in Michigan coming in the future or perhaps blended school districts. There may be districts that close down and you have the situation where students may have to go several miles to get to school. At the same time, there may be a pushback on that to say, hey, why can't we do this online? Can it be done online well enough or perhaps some mix of being in the classroom and maybe only having to go to a school, say, twice or three times a week that maybe Gary Miron and other researchers would look at it down the road and say, hey, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, you're asking me a question of whether it might happen, and I would tell you it's going to happen. And 10 or 15 years, I believe that we'll see most of our traditional public schools engaged in various forms of blended learning, with more and more of the students coming in part-time and then also working more and more from home. I talked about this innovation that many teachers are engaging in called the flip classroom, where the teachers, instead of assigning traditional homework where the children go home and they have to apply the knowledge that they learned in school, they're flipping it. And so the kids go home and they get an online material from the teacher, sometimes a webcast of a lecture he or she presented for the students. So they do that activity at home. And then when they're in the classroom, the teachers are working with them in an application of knowledge. They're doing group work. They're applying. They're problem solving. They're developing a whole bunch of 21st century skills. And they're doing that with the teacher present. And so that's how they flip it. And so now that it's just really fascinating how that's working. But we're going to see more and more of that. And we're going to see more and more of that organized school-wide instead of, just led by some teachers. But it's pretty exciting, the new technologies. And when we look at, from a policy perspective and school finance, yeah, there's opportunities for cost savings. When we can have the children bused, transported to schools, twice a week, or when we can see school facilities being used by twice as many students because half the time they're working from home. But again, this is still hinges on another notion, and that's children developing that ability to self-regulate. And that's something we have to foster with all of our children. And I think homeschool parents often do very well at that. Their children are very interested in self-discovery. They're very keen to learn, and they will learn on their own, even when not driven by a teacher or a classroom schedule. And we need to foster that in our children, but we also have to, prepare students to work. And if we look at young children, and I look at my own sons, they're often – the way they get information, it's all online. They get their news that way. Everything is – and so the children today are in many ways more advanced than educators are in terms of using the new technologies. And I think, like I said, we're going to be doing this in 10 or 15 years.
As a college professor, how much are you engaging in online learning for your students?
Every year I teach at least one or two online or hybrid classes. So the hybrid classes are blended learning, where I meet usually four times face-to-face with the students, and then the rest of the time we work online. And it's working well, and because of my own personal experience, I'm a strong believer in this as well.
Gary Miron, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Gordon.
Gary Miron is a professor of evaluation, measurement, and research at Western Michigan University. He's also the co-author of a report for the National Education Policy Center on outcomes for students in online education.